Okay, so here we go. So let's go ahead and do the roll call so we can call this meeting to order. Adrian Barnes. Not present yet. Mike Barr.
I am here.
Thank you, Mike. Steve Bork. Not here yet. Wylene Huber.
Here.
Thank you, Wylene. Good to see you. Jason Ryan.
Here.
Thank you. Let's see. Dwayne Walton. And Jonathan Dharmapalin. Okay, and I am here. So we're going to go ahead and get this meeting called to order. We are going to show the meeting norms and the OSA land acknowledgement today. We want to make sure we have enough time to allow for question and answers. So we're going to go ahead and get started. And let me open the meeting by just explaining a little bit about this meeting format for today. So the board convened this meeting to create a space for a dialogue about the CalSTRS issue in an effort to share information and create greater transparency about where we are with this particular issue. We will be focused on the issue of CalSTRS for this meeting, and we will not be discussing bargaining at this meeting. We are holding a special meeting, which will allow us to do things a little differently that will also facilitate greater dialogue, we hope. So we will have a presentation, and about half the meeting will be spent on the presentation, and the other half of the meeting will be spent answering questions. And so instead of having a traditional public comment section of the meeting, we're going to have a question and answer period for public comment. And we will try to answer as many questions as possible. We've tried to answer questions during the presentation, but also we'll have just an open period where we will hear from people in attendance. And then we'll try to answer as many questions as possible. We know that there is great concern and distrust around the CalSTRS issue, and it is our hope that this will begin the process of addressing this issue and helping to just get out the information as widely as possible. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Lisa and the admin fiscal team to share the presentation.
Thank you, Josefina. Welcome, everybody. We're here today to share some information with all of you. And we've put together a deck that we would like to go through. And as Josefina had just shared, we'd like to get through the whole thing. So please take notes, and then we will answer as many questions as possible. Kimberly has put together a wonderful, pretty comprehensive presentation, and I am going to hand things over to her. Thank you, Kimberly.
Hi, everyone. Let me apologize for not having my video on. I am having one of the worst tech days that you can imagine, and my system keeps freezing up. So I'm hoping that I'm able to get through the presentation without freezing too much. And hopefully having my video off will help me be able to do that. So just a little background, what is STRS for people that don't know? It's the California Teachers Retirement System, provides retirement, disability, and survivor benefits for basically California's educators and people who are eligible to participate. A portion of each enrollee salary is withheld and paid into the retirement system, as well as employers are responsible for paying into it as well. So how this pertains to OSA and how we've gotten into the STRS issue here, well, prior to June 30th of 2018, OSA handled all financial operations in-house. Once we switched over to CSMC, In 2018, they advised us after the very first submission of our payroll cover sheet, which is what's used to put the payroll information into the HR system so employees can be paid, that we had employees who should be in STARS, but they were not. So it was explained to us that in January of 2016, the STARS eligibility laws changed. So anyone with or without a credential who topped 50% or more of a 1.0 had to be in STARS. So this is the time period that begins OSA's error. STARS placement at the time per our employees prior to CSMC was determined by OSA's fiscal operations team. So all of this was done in-house and determined in-house. Next slide, please. Eligibility for STARS that was defined in-house was a 0.8 plus employee for both academic and arts teachers. The determination was based on the number of classes each employee was teaching. So a full-time employee works 40 hours, a 0.8 employee teaches 20 class hours per week. So the determination was made that anyone below a 0.8 was not required to mandatorily be placed into STARS. Unfortunately, this was an inaccurate definition. The true definition is based on if a part-time employee is earning 50% or more of a full-time employee's salary. So this is where we believe the misunderstanding led to the error. So in actuality, anyone that was 0.5 and above should have been placed into STARS. So those employees,
Kimberly, we're losing you. Kimberly, we're losing you. Maybe Kimberly, can you join by phone? I think we might have lost Kimberly. Lisa, do you want to take over reading the slides until we get Kimberly back? Okay, sure, great.
Absolutely. Hopefully she will be returning to us shortly. This means that anyone at 0.5 and above should have been placed in STIRS, and those employees should have been paying into STIRS and not paying into Social Security.
So sorry, everyone. Can you guys hear me again?
We can hear you now,
yes, Kimberly. Yes.
We're on the bottom.
Sorry about that. I'm so sorry. I hope this doesn't keep happening.
Don't worry, Kimberly. It's not your fault.
It has just been a crazy day. Okay.
We're on the bottom bullet.
Okay, great. So Mike was informed that we, OSA, would determine the next steps and options to minimize this impact to the school and still make sure we are meeting all the obligations to the staff. Okay, next slide. So what steps did OSA take to correct this error? So once CSMC brought this to our attention, an internal payroll audit began to determine which employees actually needed to be added to STIRS for that school year. Once payroll was already working, we were trying to make sure we had everything accurate for that year. In August of 2018, OSA's former executive director met with employees that this impacted and told them that they would be put into STIRS, that the STIRS laws changed, that OSA would be taking care of the employer and the employee portion, since both components contribute to this retirement system, and that OSA would attempt to recover the contributions that were paid into Social Security. So this was a meeting he had in-house with staff. Next slide. In October of 2020, there was an email that was sent out to ask about, two employees sent an email asking about when their eligibility started. And so we checked with STRS and found that the dates for those two employees was 2018. The former CBO had reported at the time before his departure that he was working with STRS to retroactively add members that should have been added back to 2016. What we discovered at that point is that that actually did not happen. So based on that, OSA began extensive work with STRS representatives from the Alameda County Office of Education to review every impacted employee and to ensure that placement was corrected for every employee back to 2016. The way that this was done, a spreadsheet was created. We had to research offer letters, job duties, all pertinent information, their FTE, and everything was sent over to the Alameda County Office of Education to make sure that we did not miss anyone. And like I said before, work began to add these employees back to 2016, not to just to 2018 when we first discovered the error. Next slide, please. To the best of our knowledge, all employees at this point, past and present, have been identified that should have been put into STRS back in 2016 or to the date of their mandatory enrollment. Some people were hired at a particular time and maybe their FTE at that point did not require them to be into STRS. So each employee was looked at, their date of hire, their FTE, their assignments, and we have worked with STRS to make sure that everyone is has been caught up correctly. Based on the analysis conducted by OSA, the review by STRS, review by CSMC, it was determined that this error impacted a total of 37 employees and who should have been added into STRS at various times. Once the review was completed by STRS at the end of April of 2021, after ascending information, reviews conducted on every level, we then began the steps to investigate our requirements to pay to correct this error. Okay, next slide. So meetings were held throughout the month. I'm sorry? No, okay.
Kimberly, keep going.
Okay.
Did you mute?
Okay.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Meetings were held throughout the month of May to discuss this with our legal team, CSMCs, and representatives from STRS. There are a few things that we needed to find out before finalizing the cost and how to move forward with payment. We initially came to STRS and said we plan to correct this error for both the employer and the employee because this was an internal error. Does the law allow us to do that? And so we were correct. The law will require for OSA to catch up the employer and employee portions. Do we have to correct the errors on all employees, not just the current ones? So the answer was yes. OSA needs to correct the error on everyone, regardless of if they are still at the school or before. Next slide, please. Do we have to pay the portion to catch it up at one time, or can this be done through a payment plan? So the STRS contribution portion, where we catch up what should have been paid into the retirement accounts, that portion has to be paid all at once, out of our hands. The penalties and interest that are determined after the final payment is made and calculated, STRS may allow OSA to pay that in installments, but it's up to STRS. You know, we can petition, we can ask, but it's not something that they have to grant. But since it's something that we noticed and we caught, chances are they are more likely to work with us, but we're not 100% sure on that yet. Okay, so this was discussed in May at finance committee meetings, as well as a board meeting to update the board on the impact of this STRS error. Our final confirmation of the exact total, the amount owed for employer and employee contributions, was sent to OSA on June 30th, the final amount. After all the due diligence and conversations talking to lawyers, COSAT, CSMC. We received the final amount on June 30th. So COSATS was informed of this amount after we received the final debt amount to ensure that the information that we provided was accurate. You know, we had a lot of questions about the amount. We had a lot of questions about when we have to pay the amount. Will it impact us at one time? So we wanted to make sure that all due diligence was done to confirm the details surrounding the error. The amount does include current and former employees based on the error beginning in 2016, and that's catching everyone up. Okay, next slide. So a question on how does this impact our budget? So the STRS payment and the penalties and interest will not show up on OSA's operating budget as an expense. It is a prior year correction. So the payment will be shown as a prior year adjustment. So this will impact our starting balance for 2021 in terms of what our assets total out to be. And it will impact our ending cash balance. It will reduce our ending fund balance for fiscal years moving forward. So when we approved the budget, our ending balance was $8,263,345 for year 21-22. So once this entry is made of this payment, that cash balance will be reduced to reflect that. So it will not show up in that middle section, that expense section, it will not show up that way on the budget. Next slide, please. How will OSA correct this mistake? And how does this payment impact OSA employees? So OSA, like I mentioned before, will pay all costs associated with the back payments as well as the penalties and interest. This will catch up the amount of contributions that are in each employee's STRS retirement accounts. It will also increase their creditable service hours as well. I did research to make sure that was the case. All impacted employees, past and present, will not have to pay anything out of their own pockets. This was an internal error, and we, you know, are taking care of all of that. Why was this error not caught by our external audit firm? This was another question that came up. So the external audit process does not involve an individual review of employees and their STRS enrollment. They do not do that granular of a look at individuals. They're given financial statements that provide summaries of salaries and benefits paid by each category or each classification group. So there's the teacher group, there's the certificated admin group, there's the classified admin group. There are all these different groups and they're given summaries. Those summaries are reviewed for accuracy against the financial statements, but they do not look at the cover sheets to determine who should have been placed into STRS, what their FTE, they don't look that deep into the day-to-day entries of payroll information. They review the summaries. Next slide, please. Why did it take so long to correct this error after it was discovered? So once the error was corrected or told to us by CSMC, we immediately corrected the error for 18-19. Once it was discovered that the teachers had not been caught up to 2016, an immediate analysis was conducted. We had to review every academic and arts teacher that was employed from 2016 to 2018, give all the detailed information about their agreements, their salaries, their stipends, their job duties. Once this information was given to STRS, they have their own review process on multiple levels that they do. The legal team, CSMC, and STRS also had follow-up meetings and discussion to understand the final magnitude of the error. And so that was the process that we went through to get all of this finalized. How was this error not discovered by OSA prior to CSMC coming on board? As I mentioned in the very beginning, the payroll data was compiled in-house by the financial operating team. The highest level of internal review mistakenly applied the wrong standard for figuring out who should be put into STIRS. Next slide, please. What measures has OSA taken to ensure this does not happen again? Every time a person is hired at OSA, there is a new hiring sheet that is required by CSMC. It details everything about the individual, their job title, their classification category, their FTE, their pay. Forms are also required that we have to fill out to determine if a person should be placed into STIRS. CSMC reviews all of those forms. They let us know if the forms were filled out accurately and if STIRS enrollment is required. So all of this takes place prior to a new hire being placed into the system that eventually allows them to be paid. At this time, there are myself as well as the Director of Operations reviewed the information initially before it goes to CSMC. So there are two OSA employees that review everything before it's even sent over to CSMC. Every payroll, there's a cover sheet with all the information that's also reviewed by two OSA employees before it goes to CSMC. So that reviews the payment information, the salary information, does it have a holiday when it should have one on there? Are the STIRS payments accurately reflected? So all of that is reviewed by two employees before it's sent over to CSMC for their final review. Proof of the STIRS contributions paid by OSA on behalf of their employees is also sent to OSA by CSMC every time the payments are made. Moving forward, the Director of HR and CSMC will be responsible for monitoring and implementing any future changes to STIRS eligibility requirements. So there's always two people in-house at OSA that review things initially. CSMC team reviews everything, let us know if everything is okay, and then we move forward and approve. CSMC is our back office financial office provider. So they do all of our financial processing. Well, they do a lot more than that. But in the sense of what it pertains to this conversation, they handle our financial reporting. Okay, next slide. Okay, do all teachers have to be placed into STIRS? Is OSA sure that there are no other teachers paying into Social Security instead of STIRS? So employees with creditable job duties, credentialed or not, initially it was just people that had to be credentialed, but we mentioned the law changed. And so whether you're credentialed or not, if you are being paid at 50% or more of a full-time salary, you have to be placed into STIRS. Doesn't matter if you have a credential. If you're doing a job duty that is deemed as creditable under STIRS, you have to be placed into STIRS. So as far as we know, OSA has corrected all employees that should have been paying into STIRS. Each payroll register, the document that we approve when we say, yes, this is right, pay the staff, this is all correct. Part of that review is checking to make sure each employee that should be in STIRS does not also have a Social Security deduction, or they have a Social Security deduction, but no STIRS. So there's a cross check for every single employee on our register to make sure the deductions are correct. Another question that came up, has legal action been considered in addressing this matter? We are exploring all legal options pertaining to this issue. How does this impact future employees? So of course, moving forward, we will continue to do everything that we can, working with CSMC, working in-house, to ensure that everyone is placed into STIRS correctly. This one-time payment that we have to do for STIRS for the contributions and the penalties and interest will not impact future employees directly. And that was a lot of information. So hopefully everyone took notes. You know, we can go back through and answer questions. But this is just a last slide just to wrap everything up. Rebuilding after the discovery of this error and the presentation of the information. So I'm going to turn it over to Lisa to go through this final slide.
Thank you, Kimberly. So we really want to acknowledge the magnitude of this STIRS error and how alarming it is to our community. And team members have worked really diligently behind the scenes, and the explanation that Kimberly was able to share with us this afternoon, you can see a lot of the legwork pieces of trying to make sure we were getting accurate information to ensure that all impacted teacher contributions have been corrected. The processes have been put in place to ensure this type of error never happens again. This is extremely important. And we definitely want to offer in-house individual meetings to any past or present staff member to answer any questions about their STIRS contributions or benefits that needed to or should have been paid out. So we're definitely committed to working together with our community to rebuild the trust and ensure open communication on this subject. And I'd like to turn it back over to Josefina.
For the presentation. We are going to be taking signups now for questions. Please put your name in the chat once we run through all of the people that are signing up for questions. We will also try to go back to the chat and answer those questions if they were not asked. And just to clarify, we will be posting that slideshow so that everybody will have access to it after the meeting. So let's go ahead and go to the questions. And I believe we have Brad Erickson up first.
Hi, thank you. And yeah, this is a very upsetting situation. Thank you for the update and all the work that's been done to try to correct this. So I have really two things I wanted to ask about. One is that I understand that there will be a significant payment to catch up that STIRS is not permitting us to pay back in installments. And I just want to know if you've considered borrowing that money or some of that money from another source in order to lessen the blow on the budget and current spending for the next year. The second question is that I understand the kind of internal, that this was a failure both of the certain staff, the administration, but also of the board, having been informed and somehow dropped the ball on this. And so I think I heard some things about what was being done in-house to prevent this occurring again with the HR staff, but I didn't really hear what was being done in terms of the board's oversight. I imagine that the board officers have job descriptions which say what they're responsible for. And I just want to know if you're doing an annual review of yourselves as a board to make sure that you are keeping up, and it may be a combination of self-evaluation and group evaluation, just as a process that could help everyone as board members. I know I'm on boards myself, and as a volunteer, it's can be hard to keep track of everything. And so maybe there can be some thinking in the board about how to hold one another accountable and to make sure that you're keeping up with the oversight to protect OSA from things like this. That's all, thank you.
Thank you for that. Answer the
first question, if you don't mind, Josefina.
Yes, go ahead, Kimberly.
The question in terms of, have we looked into taking out loans or figuring out things to soften this immediate blow? And we have discussed options in the finance committee meetings, and in the board meetings to discuss how to lessen this impact. The thing that we have to also consider, though, so the answer is nothing has been finalized, but the other thing that we have to consider is the longer it takes for us to pay this, the longer it takes for the teachers' accounts to be reflecting correct information, and it also impacts the penalties and interest. So the longer, if we hold out, you know, to figure out these things, it will end up costing the school more, but we have discussed other ways that we can try to soften the initial impact of it. Yes.
Yeah, if I can clarify, I was just asking if there was kind of cheaper money, you know, if you're paying this all back at once, is there cheaper money that you can borrow with fewer penalties, fewer, lower interest to lessen the blow that way? That's what I was trying to get at. Thank you.
Thank you, Brad. I just wanted to answer, you know, part of the of your question about the board's responsibility, the board's role. And I just wanted to share with everybody in the meeting that the board will be having a retreat coming up before, hopefully before the beginning of this school year, to really have a deep conversation. It'll be a public meeting about the role of the board in governance at OSA. And so I think what you're talking about will be part of that conversation as well. So let's go to the next person. I think we have Liz Gazzano.
Hi, thank you. I also have two questions. I mean, I guess my biggest question is, what is the anticipated impact on the faculty, if any, as far as are we going to be losing teachers? Are we going to be having, I mean, this is a huge amount of money. So I think that's the top of my mind is, what's the impact on the school itself of this huge amount of money we got to pay?
Mm-hmm. Let me turn it over to Lisa to start the response.
Thank you. The board passed a budget and they also passed last spring offer letters to our faculty, and those will all stay. So our board did pass a budget in June, and that is at a slight surplus. And so no, we will not be losing any faculty.
Okay.
Thank goodness.
That's amazing. I mean, that's great news. I guess that kind of feeds into my next question is, so you're saying that instead of paying into this retirement fund, the faculty for these years paid in, the affected faculty for these years paid into their Social Security. So what do you do about their payments into Social Security? Do you compensate them for those payments as well?
This is where it gets challenging, because each individual person is different. And this is why it took an audit to really see where does each individual person stand and what do we need to do as an organization to make things whole again. So that's a difficult question for me to answer, because it really depends on the individual person.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, let me append that a little bit, Liz. Of the number that Kimberly shared earlier, $1.3 million, about $500,000 of that is contributions that had we enrolled people properly, it would have been withheld from their paychecks and then submitted to STIRS. We are now making that contribution to STIRS without withholding it from their paycheck.
Got it. Okay. Thanks. That answers. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah. And the other thing, sorry, just about how it's going to impact and to tie a couple things together on the budget. Kimberly mentioned also that there's going to be what's called a prior period adjustment, where mm-hmm. our ending balance or our starting balance for the year we just ended will be lower. We are also accruing our best estimate of interest and penalties into the fiscal year that just ended last week. So there should be no impact this year or going forward.
All right, thanks. I would just want to compliment Kimberly, especially for presenting this really well and dumbing it down for us, because it sounds incredibly complicated. Thank you.
Okay.
No worries.
Thank you for those questions and responses. Kathy Kosmeski.
Hi there. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I am a former OSA employee. I was a credentialed teacher from August 2010 to October 2019. However, from August to 2010 through August 2016, I was paying Social Security, not STIRS. And it's my understanding, based off this presentation, that I should have been on STIRS. Is that correct for me to? Did I understand that? Because I was a credential employee. So even before that law changed, I should have been on STIRS?
I'm sorry, I missed the very first part of your question. I'm sorry.
No problem. No problem.
Sorry.
Can you? I was a credential employee, a credential teacher from August 2010 through August 2016. Well, I was there for longer, but through August 2010 through August 2016, I was on Social Security. I was not on STIRS, but it sounds like through this presentation, I should have been. Is that correct?
I don't know an answer to that right now. I would have to go back, research those records, see what your offer letters were during that time frame, what your FTE was during that time frame, and send that information, compile that information, research where that information is, and then send it in for review. So I don't have an answer today. But if you wouldn't mind, I guess, sending me an email with the information, I can do my best to follow up.
Okay. Can I ask, the loss is January of 2016. Is that correct?
That was the law. That was the time for the law that changed that said if you had a credential or not, it did not matter. Prior to that, my understanding is that it was for credentialed teachers were the mandatory people that had to be enrolled into STIRS. And so that component of the law changed in 2016, whether you were credentialed or not. And if you taught, if you were being paid 50% or more of a full-time person's salary.
Yeah. Okay. So I was credentialed, but even if before 2016, I would at least have those 8 months with this new law passed. So at the very least, there's 8 months I was paying into social. And I'm very happy to email you, giving you, I don't want to take more time.
I don't know your FTE and all of those things. So I don't think it was just the credential. It may have been the FTE amounts. And I don't know the history of your case, unfortunately. So we can definitely talk about it.
I want to bring it up for not only personal reasons, obviously, but as just kind of like as not all potential teachers have been informed, because just based off this presentation, I fit at least 8 months of the criteria, probably more. And if it wasn't for me just maintaining contact with former OSA friends, I would not have known about this. I was not informed.
Okay. Yeah, definitely shoot me an email, because I definitely want to do everything that I can to research it and correct whatever measures need to be done. You know, we'll follow up and research and communicate about it.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
No worries.
Okay. Thank you. Paulina Gonzalez.
Thank you. And thank you on this. It's just really upsetting to hear, you know, Kathy speak about this now and know that the teachers are trying to make heads and tails of this, the faculty, and, you know, to have been here in 2018 and no teachers and faculty that are no longer here. And I wonder if they know, but I have some questions. So, so this was 2016. I remember Jonathan Faustine. And I have a few questions, and I'm sorry, I'm just gonna ask them. And so in 2018, there was a determination made that I saw from Kimberly's slide. And that determination, I'm wondering who at that time. And, you know, I know there were regular financial updates to the board, and because I was there at some of those board meetings and heard them, but I also saw from Kimberly's, and so I wonder if that determination was presented to the board. So I have a question for those that were there on the board at that time, whether they heard and understood that determination. And then second, Mike Barr, you know, Mike, you heard in 2018 about this problem. And so, you know, the board has a fiduciary responsibility. That is their, you know, other than hiring and firing the ED, the other primary responsibility of the board is fiduciary. And so I would like to know what process you went through and the board went through in 2018 when you found out about this problem. So those are my first two questions.
All right. Mike, do you want to respond to those two questions?
I can respond to the second one. Yeah, I have very clear memory of being informed by Jonathan about this in August of 2018. What I can't account for, Paulina, is the estimate that he initially gave me, which is $180,000 to $200,000, which was, while a material amount, not earth-shattering like it is now. That number is now $1.2 million. He was in conversations with the executive director at the time. He was in conversation with Alameda County. He was in conversation with the folks in Sacramento working for STIRS. And he was working to mitigate it or lessen it. And that was going on that fall. Finance committee did talk about it a couple of times that we had it out there to tackle. And then it sort of got quiet for a while. So we didn't get any new information from either the chief business officer or the executive director at the time. So the next I heard about it was, frankly, a couple of months ago, as outlined in Kimberly's thing. So we thought it had been resolved.
Okay. Yeah. So I guess I would love to see those finance committee minutes where it was discussed. And maybe you can share those with the parents. I don't see the 2018 finance committee minutes on the website. So we'd love to get those.
Have those.
Well, then that's a problem. You
well,
should,
it's
right?
Not, and it's secondly, my job to maintain that
and then,
for the meeting.
Well, I'm just whoever, Romy or
I don't need to be told
whoever.
That to do my work, but I appreciate
yeah.
it.
So, but Mike, I guess, well, where I will say, I think there is a problem in terms of doing the work is, as a fiduciary responsibility, the next question would be to Faustine is, what happened, right? Was there follow-up with CalSTRS? You know, was this resolved? And that, I think, is where the concern is. I run a nonprofit. I know my board would have asked me as the executive director whether I followed up on that and whether it was resolved. And then secondly, I would say with the auditor, I'm finding no recommendations in any of the audits from the auditor, which would be a huge red flag to my board. So not findings, but recommendations. So I'm wondering, who chose the auditor and whether that was ever discussed in terms of whether this auditor was appropriate for the school and really doing a good job. Was that ever discussed? I mean, anybody who was around at that, anybody else?
I can't respond to a question about how the auditor was selected at that time. I mean, I think typically an auditor is selected and then, you know, the audit is presented to the board. I don't believe we've had an audit presented, you know, for last fiscal year yet. That hasn't been completed, but I don't know if anybody else on the board that's present in this meeting has any information about the auditor selection.
Yeah, we had an audit committee at one time that was the only member of the audit committee was a former board member who's no longer with us. I was not part of that. In my role as finance committee chair, I have to play a very careful role about being involved in the audit because there's should be a wall between the two. Mm-hmm, yeah. I can say that we've had the same auditors for best of my recollection, my 7-year tenure. As I think Kimberly laid out in one of her slides, the audit testing does not go to a level that would have gone to an individual checking that they're enrolled in STIRS. And I think Kimberly said it more eloquently on her slide. So this is not something that, frankly, an auditor would be expected to catch given the scope of what they're engaged to do.
Yeah, so I'm done, but I just want to say that I think, it's shocking to me that there wasn't follow-up with when Jonathan Faustine raised this in 2018 by the board. I just, as fiduciary responsibility, that's just shocking that didn't happen and should have happened. And the second thing is, when you have an audit, if you see 7 years of no recommendations, I would have a lot of questions as a board member about why that is.
I don't think anybody said there were 7 years of no recommendations.
I looked at the audits and I can't find them. And okay. So with the management letters. So that should be a huge red flag for a board's fiduciary responsibility. So that's it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Paulina. Let's go to Karen Morfin.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions regarding the comment that the auditors don't go into those specific details. I mean, my specialization is in tax. I am a CPA. However, I did do audits. And one of the main responsibilities of a CPA or an auditor is actually test the ending balances on the balance sheet. Specifically those items which are stated on the financial audit report. If you look at your financial audits, stairs is one of the items in which they should have heavily tested. And yes, they don't have to go into every single employee, but they should have gotten a roster of all the employees, test all of the balances and actually verify that these liabilities fully funded. If the liability is not fully funded or it was not tested, then it wouldn't have been stated on your auditor's report. I went from 2016 to present, and the auditor's report state that OSA, it comes with percentages. So they either had to do some type of testing or they were estimating. And again, if these are inaccurate financials, then... or if they suspected of any additional liability as a subsequent event, they would have notated that. I'm looking at 2018, 19, and 20, and there are no subsequent event notes on the auditor's report that should have been brought up by your auditors. There are none. So just again, and also it goes to what was the intent and who was the intent from? Was the intent from the board to omit this information from 2016 to 2020, or was an omission of error in these financials? Or was the auditor's mistake in not properly fulfilling the auditor's responsibility to fully test these liabilities in funding and omit them from the reports? Either way, this I think this really needs to be more closely looked at than just stating that they don't go into details. This is not a financial review. We pay for an audit, and as part of the audit, this test needs to be extensive, especially when it comes to pensions, stairs, 401ks, et cetera. So that's my comment regarding that. Now, ask questions. One that it's very clear to me is if we're going to go ahead and pay this amount, are we making any changes to our goals for funding for next year? I know we lost our advancement team, two key people. I mean, we need to be really careful on how we budget for next year and what our goals are and how we set our goals. I mean, as devastating as these news are and as disappointing that this is, I feel like we still as parents are here to support this school in any way that we can to not only fulfill the current goal that was set, but perhaps make it a priority to increase our donations or increase our efforts to collect more money so that our teachers are, you know, compensated. I feel like we need to start. Yeah, we're all bogged down that this happened, and I'm very disappointed at the fiduciary responsibility from the board from 2016 to today. I must also say that it is clear to me that the prior board members have not taken an active role in OSA. And we should really rethink on how we structure the board going forward. I know there are a couple of positions that will be open, but I just wanna make sure that the current members of the board understand that this cannot be an item that you put in your name and we appreciate your presence, but we have to be a little bit more hands-on. It is part of your role. It is also a great responsibility to be here and bring your expertise. So I don't think a hands-off leadership at OSA will be acceptable going forward. But again, we're here as parents to also support the board in a more hands-on and share leadership. That's what essentially what OSA needs. Share leadership, share governance, and transparency. The fact that we are here after years of knowing about this information, and this had been hidden from us in a way because it was not stated on the auditor's report. It has not been stated clearly in other board meetings, shows a lack of transparency, and we cannot move like this going forward. There are legal ramifications for this. So, you know, if there's any way that we can set the board for better success in transparency, I would really like to hear about how the board plans to do that after you guys meet. And that's it for Maple Woodland Common.
Thank you, Karen. I just wanted to say on the development front that the board has set a more aggressive goal for development advancement for next year, but it's not a goal that the board can reach by themselves. So I think you're absolutely right that we're going to need the support from parents and everybody on the development front to be able to reach that goal and then, you know, reach increased goals in subsequent years. But, you know, development is, you know, it takes time to build that capacity. And so I just want to put out there, like, you know, we need to have reasonable expectations on the development / advancement space. I mean, we can get there, but it's going to take time to get there. So,
Sophia, can I also add that?
Really?
Yes. We have committees, of course, set up for the board, the advancement committee, the finance committee. We are beginning to meet collectively instead of just separate committees, because these two committees do work together to really come together and focus on those goals, things that you mentioned, how we move forward, reevaluating everything, talking about our policies, and just handling, you know, the financial situation head on together as both committees. So there is conversation about moving forward and about making changes and reevaluating, you know, every aspect of finance at the school. So I do just want the community to know that we are coming together to meet to discuss these things regularly.
Yeah, thank you for that, Kimberly. And there have already been changes, and we anticipate more changes in terms of how we work together and the kinds of and a different kind of focus on systems for OSA. So let's go ahead and call on, I think the next person is Jeremy Taylor.
Thank you. I just wanted to circle back to Kathy Kuzmeski's comment, because I appreciate Kimberly's willingness to work with her one-on-one on her particular case, but I think that the board is missing the larger issue that her case raises, which is that this is not a 2016 and above issue. I posted at towards the beginning of the chat, very simple Google search on STIRS website indicates at least back as early as 2013, it was required that all teachers be enrolled in STIRS, certainly all full-time teachers. She was a full-time teacher, and yet she was put into Social Security. I know of at least one other teacher from that era, Eric Kemper, was also put into Social Security, but it's not my job to go through my internal Rolodex of, wait, who worked at OSA when, and call them all up and find out if they were improperly placed in Social Security instead of STIRS. It sounds like there was an audit done of teachers from 2016 and on. There needs to be a complete and thorough audit of every teacher, whether they worked for 1 year or 10 years, since the school opened, and who was not put in STIRS, because that is deducting service credits from their pension, which amounts to tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars of retirement income that they will lose because of that. And it can't just be because Kathy is still friends with people here that she's aware of this and that, you know, she asked that question. Every teacher who has come through these doors needs to get that same level of treatment. And 2016 is an arbitrary, I understand the law changed and it kind of exacerbated the problem because it shifted full-time down to half-time or whatever the adjustment was there. But prior to that, there were still teachers that were being given the choice to go into Social Security. There was an executive director at the time who was encouraging people to go into Social Security, trying to convince them that that was better for them. And my reading of what the STRS website says is that even if they wanted Social Security, that was not their option. They had to be in STRS. And so we need to do a full, you know, it's almost a 20-year audit at this point. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Other public comment signups? Maya, are you raising your hand? No? Okay, Romy, do we have any more people for public comment?
Maury signed up for public comment.
Okay, Maury, go ahead.
Hi, everyone. I've come in and out of this meeting, so I'm sorry if I missed some things. I'm Maury. I'm one of the co-presidents of the APT. I just want to say that I feel very mixed in this meeting because I've been very encouraged by some changes in this board of directors in the last couple months, and actually an attempt to have transparency and some information given around this situation is a feels like a shift. But I cannot, as an executive director who works with boards, as board member on other organizations, this is mind blowing to me that an error of this magnitude was made, first of all. Second of all, that it was discussed in 2018 and that it was not corrected at that point. And third of all, that we still don't feel confidence in the audit that is fully covering all the teachers. So I try to be a positive human in my relations, but I really question the oversight of those who were on this board in 2016 and 2018, and would ask you to think about your level of oversight in this. And that I think that for a variety of reasons, over this next year, it's going to be critical to get some fresh eyes on this board of directors who can take us into the next period and have more confidence in oversight. Thank you.
Thank you, Maury, for that. Chris Bradburn.
Yeah, thank you. So when this news came to COSETS, one of the things that we did is we did some outreach both to our current membership as well as prior teachers. Not a comprehensive to prior teachers, we don't have access to all of those, all that contact information, but basically through our social networks. I am just in the initial kind of informal, semi-formal audits we've done about who's got problems. It is a very significant number of people with various and sundry concerns about their CalSTRS accounts or lack of CalSTRS accounts. And you know, there's also an issue that hasn't been brought up, which is the sick leave accruals. It's a complicated thing, but basically, as I understand, and I'm still learning a lot about CalSTRS, as I understand, your sick leave goes into your CalSTRS benefit in the end. It's a formula. To the best of our figuring, we do not have accurate records of OSA employees accrued sick leave so that when they do retire, that can go into their benefit. When you transfer to a different school, and Jason, you would certainly know about this, that sick leave is supposed to transfer over. That I don't believe has happened. We have been told there is a internally held spreadsheet sitting on a computer somewhere. COSATS has requested to get a copy of that. We've not received that yet. It's just what I highly encourage the school to do is to do a very serious forensic audit of what's going on. I think the problems are very, very deep. And I just hope that that the board and administration will dive deep into this, do an audit on every employee record. I'm deeply concerned with what I'm seeing. It's the level of the number of mistakes that people are reporting to me is horrifying. on their personnel file, on their personnel information, and how it applies to payroll. So please, I hope that someone on this board will put forth a motion to have an audit done on the accounting, specifically with payroll and employee records. Thank you.
May I comment to Chris Josefina?
Yes, Kimberly.
I, again, and many times have told you guys how much I appreciate the work that all of our teachers are doing. The job of auditing and researching and communicating with people should not fall on our teaching staff in this area. And so I understand that COSATS is there to receive information and help to get information to the administration. I have not been the point person in receiving any requests or anything moving forward, but I do not want any of the COSATS representatives to feel like they need to carry the burden of this, you know, investigation or holding all communication. I don't know necessarily what was in place before in terms of that communication with other staff members, but please don't hesitate to send whatever request you may have or whatever clarifying, you know, issues or problems that your, you know, teaching staff, representatives, people that belong to the union are sending to you. I'm not aware of things that come through the channels and they don't always end up on my lap because, you know, I primarily deal with the accounting piece of things, the numbers and, you know, getting things paid and, you know, reimbursements and deposits and helping to compile reports. And so please don't feel like this is something that you have to carry, you know, on your own as representatives of COSATS. I understand that there has been a breakdown of trust. I understand that you feel like you have to stand up and take this on because you're not trusting what you're saying. But I'm asking moving forward, anything that you have, if someone reaches out and they want clarification on something that any of our team members now can offer some insight to, and I will clearly say, I don't have the answer, but I will do the best that I can to find it, you know, to work through information that is requested that we need to send over. So I know things may not have been smooth sailing in the past and we have these issues that come up. But definitely for me, if there is something that falls into this area,
incoming call from Philip Gideon, you know, mobile,
please make sure, you know, that it's sent over just so that we're not missing things and we can follow up with people along with you.
Thank you. Thank you for that response, Kimberly. Dr. Melinda De Jesus.
Thank you, Josefina. Hi, I'm Melinda De Jesus. I have two kids at OSA and I'm currently the APT co-chair. I just wanted to say that I agree wholeheartedly with what Maury said regarding the lack of the board oversight about this issue back to 2016. And I just want to reiterate that OSA is nothing without its amazing teachers and that we really need to support them. APT and parents, we support them fully. And the senior administration and also the board of directors must as well. I am really concerned about the trust issue that exists now as we're trying to get the collective bargaining agreement for COSATS. And this is kind of just thrown, you know, into the wrench. It's thrown a wrench into this entire process and school's gonna be starting in what, a month? I really would love to see this resolved quickly. And I'm not really sure how that can happen. But again, there's a huge trust issue that's, you know, just been laid bare. And that really needs to be taken into consideration moving forward. How is the best way, what is the best way that this institution can support the teachers that have been basically been underpaid and undercompensated for years? How can we expect teachers to trust this institution and to continue working at OSA? I mean, as much as I want these wonderful teachers to continue to instruct my kids, I'm not sure if that's tenable at all, given the current financial situation in the Bay Area, and also just given the trust issues with this institution. So I think as a school, we really need to come together and rectify this. And I really would like to see some strong leadership from the board to make sure that nothing like this happens again. And let's support COSATS now. Thank you.
I'm sorry to cut in, Dr. Melinda and Josefina, but I did have a question, and it's actually going a step back. So if anybody wanted to respond to Dr. Melinda's statement first, I can wait. I did want to ask a clarifying question.
Go ahead, Jason.
Okay, so I first of all, I wanted to go back and thank Kimberly. We know you didn't cause the situation and have clearly done a great deal of work in terms of researching what's happened and looking into things. But I think Chris and Dr. Melinda bring up a really good question, and that is what would be the best process through which we can reassure present employees, past employees, et cetera, that we've caught all of the teachers and individuals that might've been impacted by the oversight, and also what kind of support would be needed in order for something along those lines to take place?
Well, initially on our end, I would have to contact, I guess, the STRS representatives and see if there has been a discussion prior to 2016. If that was the case, I would have to communicate and find out who was a part of this discussion and what information that we could get. After that, if there hasn't been a discussion, we would need to find out, just like we did initially with this, what all the STRS need to conduct an investigation. This is not something, of course, I would love for it to be resolved immediately, but because I would have to research and find this information and try and see if I could get assistance from prior employees to help move this along, there would be a lot of discovery that would need to take place, a lot of information we would have to research to present to STRS to move forward with the same investigation or analysis that they completed as well. So it would just be starting the conversation and then figuring out what are the next steps that we have to take. And then of course, informing COSATS that this is what is happening. This is where we are. And we update them every time we get some form of an update. I don't know all the employees that this would impact. You know, it would be looking at contacting, reaching out to those employees. I don't even know where all of that information is. So it would, you know, take a while to get it compiled, but it's definitely a process that we can begin to figure out what all needed to be done. And we could just make sure that we're alerting everyone, the board, community, COSATS, as we go through the process.
If we already gotten anything from, and I'm sorry, the CSMC, have we gotten anything from them confirming that they've already at least identified, if maybe it's a communication error, but it seems that at least some people who are impacted may not be aware, which could be an indication that it also hasn't been resolved for those present and former employees. So I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, do we have any indication that that kind of examination has already taken place during a previous audit? Or
who's been contacted? And you mean in terms of who's been contacted?
Who's been impacted and who's been contacted?
So in terms of who's been impacted, from 2016, the employees from that point moving forward, there is a spreadsheet that lists all of those members. Mm-hmm. I would have to confirm when communication was, I know that I am aware of some of the communication that was given out to employees, but I wasn't in charge of doing that portion of it. So I would have to follow up to see when each person on that list was contacted. And some of the people that have come up tonight have mentioned things. I would have to check and see if they're on that list and see why they're not on that list, and then get the ball rolling with the same process for people that should have been on that list.
Got it.
Well, let's go to Mike and then Kava. We have signed waiting for public comment as well. Mike?
Yeah, I just want to acknowledge a couple things. So we're not the only, we're not the first charter school, the first school to have to sort through an issue like this. And I say that because we can probably find somebody who has been through the type of audit slash reconciliation we're talking about doing. We're not the first ones to ever need that. It would be, it's much more difficult to do something when you're doing it for the first time. And I think the board would like to see, at least from where I sit, I'd like to see, you know, are there other resources we can use to help us get through this? You know, there perhaps STRS has a department that specializes in helping companies navigate through this. Perhaps FICMAT has some resources for that. We're not the first ones to try and figure it out. It might be easier if we get some outside help to help make that happen. I would support that cost permitting that we look at that as one of the next steps for what we've been discussing here.
Thank you, Mike. Kava.
Hi, everyone. Just listening and absorbing. Thank you, Kimberly, for that presentation. It was really thorough and just appreciate your effort. Just being a longstanding employee, I have a lot of questions about our record keeping and the accuracy of our record keeping, not specifically with you, Kimberly.
Susan Hoops?
I'm just wondering how far our record keeping goes back, because I'm hearing us discuss like maybe doing an internal STRS investigation. And then I'm hearing that some of the data actually lives within our own institution. And I'm wondering, for somebody like me that's been at the school for a really long time, you know, I'm wanting an audit of my own case and my own profile. And I'm wondering if Kimberly, if you could share, anybody just on admin could share, are we able to go back? And what does that record keeping look like in terms of just personnel records? Kimberly, I heard you said that it's based on like FTE and contracts and those kind of things. Do we have data all the way back to the beginning of school?
I honestly don't know 100%. I know that when I came on board in 2018, there were of course financial records, payroll information. The furthest that I've seen back in the offices that I'm aware of is, I believe, until 2017. That does not mean, however, that Antoinette did not work with staff to put them somewhere else in the school that I'm just not aware of. I was just on one storage area, so I don't know how far back, you know, I would have to get to the school and look.
I would recommend our first chief financial officer was John Payne when the school started, and then Antoinette, and then you, Kimberly. And I think it would be worth us having conversations with all three of them, or all two of them, in addition to you, just to see what that record keeping was like, and just to help uncover that data, because 2016, like I started in 2002. I just have a lot of questions about.
It's been a while, and it's a lot of data, a lot of paperwork. I don't know if things were backed up in some way at some point. I know that there's a statute of time that you have to keep records. I don't know. We just have to go in and look and see what we can find.
If we could share out on that information and just like how far our records go back, I think that would be really helpful, just as we're doing some of the back mapping to even contact employees, just so we know does have, and then what we're also looking to previous employees.
Would you mind putting that into the chat? I know that David or someone down the chat, and I'm not keeping a list of every single question request. So if you could put it in the chat, so there's a written request.
Yeah, I'll send you an email that's a little more detailed, just with some of the suggestions and ideas.
Okay, thank you for that, Kava. Lisa, you have your hand up.
Yes, thank you. I'm just listening to some very thoughtful questions, some suggestions, and some really diehard concerns. And this has to be a priority, and it has been, and it is, and it will continue to be. I think that there's some, thank you for that, Kava. It is important for us to go back all the way back, as Jeremy said, and review these records. We make sure we're doing our due diligence for our employees at OSA. And so this will have to be, I mean, this certainly is not the last step. We wanted to bring this to our community so you could see where we are right now. And I really want to thank many of you who spoke up today and offered suggestions. They're very heartfelt and I've written them down. But I do think that there needs to be a more thorough audit so that we make sure we're making corrections for each and every person that has come through and lent their talents to OSA. I also just wanted to share a point that as Josefina shared earlier, we, and to Karen's point, we will be advancing our fundraising substantially starting in the fall. And we will be presenting to our whole community to see how our parents want to help, maybe our teachers want to help, our community wants to help. And so I did want to share that with all of you because we are in quite a situation. And yet I think this is an incredible school. And I think that we can take this school to a much higher level and we will get through this. And we will be putting plans into place. So thank you everyone.
So thank you. So we have Kimberly and then Chris, and that'll be our last comment slash question. Go ahead, Kimberly. Okay, I don't, maybe you did not have your hand up. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I've mentioned this in prior board meetings, but a reminder that in 2019, in the end of the year meeting, the board chose to set aside 10% of the budget as a...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, stop.
Go ahead. Kimberly, you're still breaking up. Why don't we let Chris talk and then you can finish up. Go ahead, Chris.
So there is money set in reserve. It's 10%, which is, from what I understand, an atypically high amount. The state only requires 3% of the budget to be set aside in reserve. It's been explained to us that this is a rainy day fund. I would say if a rainy day is here, this is it. I strongly encourage the board to consider using the funds that they set aside in 2019 to help offset some of this. Thank you.
Thank you. Kimberly, did you have a comment?
That was my comment.
Okay. All right. So I want to really thank everyone for being part of this conversation. I know it was a difficult conversation. It's a conversation none of us want to be having. This is the kind of error that, is very painful for many, many different reasons. I think that, everybody here is committed to not just fixing this particular issue, but going back and figuring out if there's more that needs to be resolved related to CalSTRS, but also looking forward, really doing the hard work to create the systems that this school needs to be able to be a more sustainable and equitable institution. I think the board is committed to that, but there's tremendous work that has to happen in order to move us to that place. This is just one of many conversations that we will all be having. And I would really encourage the individual faculty members to schedule one-on-one meetings with members of the admin team to be able to go back and talk about their own personal situation in a confidential space. And so to make sure that they are placed where they need to be placed according to their years of service. So thank you, everyone. I'm going to adjourn the meeting now. We will be posting the PowerPoint presentation and we will be looking at the chat and following up with any questions or people that shared their individual stories to make sure that we can be in contact with everybody. So thank you again, and this meeting is adjourned.